Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're part of the Blue Wire Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. We're also joined by Kevin Farragan of the Dennis Podman podcast. Guys, we're talking about a Bulls loss, 121-110. Bulls losing to the Lakers. Jason, it seems like every time we plan a live podcast, the Bulls get smoked on that game, and that's exactly what happened tonight. The Lakers jumped out to a big lead early. The Bulls clawed back at the start of the second half, or the start of the second quarter. The Lakers built up another big lead, and the Bulls could not come back from it in the fourth quarter. Bulls lose 121-110. Bulls fall to 36-40 on the year. They're 10th in the Eastern Conference right now. They are, I believe, 2.5 games above the Wizards, or 2 games above the Wizards. So they're two.
With the tiebreaker, though, so it's they're safe, basically safe in the 10th. Go ahead, continue.
And that is with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games left in the regular season. This comes off the back of another loss to an LA team, the Bulls losing at the Clippers on Monday, 124-112. So before that, the Bulls were playing pretty good ball. If they would have beat the Clippers and the Lakers, they'd be back to 500. Instead, they're 4 games under 500 right now, and their chances at getting the number 8 seed are very slim. Now, there still isn't a lot of separation in the standings. They have to make up 2 games to get to the number 8 seed. That's where the Hawks currently sit. The Bulls do play the Hawks in their final 6 games, so that could give them an opportunity for a victory. But in general, the road got much more difficult to that number 8 seed by losing these 2 games. And it now feels likely that the Bulls are going to be the 10th seed in the play-in tournament, which means they have a single elimination game against the 9 seed. And if they win that, they have to win another game against the loser of the 7 versus the 8 for the right to face the Milwaukee Bucks, who look like the championship favorites right now. Not great stuff for the Bulls. They really needed to close strong here to have any hope of getting the 8 seed, and it seems like it's probably not going to happen. It's tough because the Bulls have been playing pretty good ball since the All-Star break, since picking up Patrick Beverley. But what we saw tonight, Jason, was really what we've seen all season from the Bulls. It was a team that could not make an open three-pointer. It was a team that, while this hasn't been happening all season, it did happen tonight. They got pounded on the glass by the Lakers. The Lakers taking big advantage of the Bulls on the offensive glass. And in general, it just felt like LA packed the paint and dared the Bulls to beat them from the three-point line, and the Bulls were just totally unable to do that. Bulls finished the game 9 of 33 from 3. The other big number that jumps off the stat sheet, the friendly Lakers whistle that Kevin Farragan and Stefan Noh both detailed. Kevin on Twitter, Steph at the Sporting News. The Lakers shoot 30 free throws. The Bulls shoot 13, so they doubled them up. And I believe the stat was coming into the week, Jason, the Lakers had shot, let's see, I got the number right here. The Lakers had shot 387 more free throws than their opponents. And the second most in the league was Miami at 184. So since the refs screwed over the Lakers by not calling a foul on LeBron in that game against the Celtics, and the refs tweeted out that, you know, it keeps him up all night, crying every night, thinking about the fact that for once in his life, LeBron James did not get a call. Well, now the Lakers are getting every call, and it happened again tonight. So Bulls lose 121-110 to the Lakers. Jace, this game sucked.
On the free throw front, I believe they showed the graphic on the Bulls broadcast tonight, and Lakers are now like plus like 420 or 430. I think they were plus 411 when they showed the graphic, and obviously there was a big differential tonight. So that Lakers whistle, very friendly. Not gonna say that's why the Bulls lost tonight. I mean it kind of was the differential, but I mean the Lakers, this game was decided by the Lakers starting lineup was just completely dominant against the Bulls starting lineup. Patrick Beverley was a minus 30, did not make a single shot. After the game in L.A. The Sunday matinee where the Bulls played one of their best games of the season in Los Angeles, and they beat the Lakers. That was LeBron coming back. He comes off the bench, and the Bulls' offense was just smoking. They were awesome, and then Patrick Beverley hit LeBron with the two small. Great moment there, and Bulls' vibes were really good after that game to start that West road trip after they had beaten Portland, who was tanking. Good vibes were good. That Clippers game on Monday night was basically a schedule loss. So surviving a back-to-back in LA with like the matinee, the weird schedule they had, was just probably not going to happen. And the Clippers came out and had like 40 assists and made like 23 pointers. So like there was just no way they were going to win both of those games. But even then, so you come back now, I know the Lakers had a few days off. They had not played since that Sunday game. So the Lakers were well rested. You figured they were going to come out hot, and they did. 27-10, 8 minutes into the game, the Bulls were getting smoked. Bulls bench, they come back. Dennis Schroeder and Malik Beasley were terrible. The Lakers bench Darvin Ham with some really bad bench lineups. Really weird, staggering stuff going on there. Because, again, the Lakers starters were dominant in this game. LeBron, 88, almost 40. LeBron was great. Austin Reeves was great. D'Angelo Russell was great. But some really bad Lakers bench lineups helped the Bulls get back in it. Kobe had another nice game today. I know the Bulls did not have Andre Drummond, and they kept talking about how that hurt them on the glass. And while it definitely did a bit, he gets out for some personal reasons. Like, the Bulls bench was mostly fine. It was basically the starters who got smoked. The Bulls came back. They were kind of close, but then end of the first half was poor. The Lakers starters dominated, and the Lakers kind of just cruised in the second half. Never really got that competitive again, because again, Lakers pushed it out to 18. Bulls bench kind of almost got it back at one point, but I don't think it ever got closer than like 7 or 8 points again. The Lakers pushed it back out. And then the end of the game was just like kind of hilarious, because the Bulls were making like every shot they took, and the Lakers just weren't trying. But then the Bulls were also like weren't trying hard on defense either, and the AD just kept scoring, and the Lakers just kept scoring. They just kept trading baskets, and we get 11-point loss. And this is the third, I think, what? I mean, the Bulls have been kind of weird lately. Talk about they have been playing better. And what are their record? Their record now since the All-Star break is 3 over .500. But like their losses lately have not been pretty. We look going back to last Wednesday. Was that last Wednesday against Philly? They go down 17-0. They were down over 20 points right away. They end up just getting absolutely obliterated. They got obliterated by the Clippers the other night. They basically get obliterated tonight. So like, while the Bulls have been playing better, like in general since the break, I feel like we've seen some of that might be just would have been. Definitely playing better, but as we talked about in our last pod, like maybe not indicative of like a like suddenly dominant Bulls team, because we've seen them get overmatched in several of these games against good opponents lately. And while they did play great again in LA on Sunday, they obviously blew out the just tanking Blazers, like kind of back to reality with some of these other losses. And now as they come down the stretch, as you mentioned, a couple games out of the Raptors and Hawks, kind of said they're definitely probably safe, almost certainly. I'll knock on wood, I guess, but probably safe here to get the 10, because the Pacers have totally fallen off. The Wizards did beat the Celtics last night, but they're still, I think, two games back, as we mentioned, and the Bulls have the tiebreaker there. So the Bulls are probably locked into 10. They do play the Hawks again, but they're two back. They'd have to pass the Raptors too to get into that 7-8 game. So They're two games back of them, and the Raptors have the tiebreaker. And even though the Raptors' closing schedule is pretty brutal, they're just running out of time. And losing those last two games, I've heard. So it does look like the 9-10 game, which is kind of where we figured they were going to end up anyways. I guess it's been better. I'm glad they've played a little better lately for sure. Like, if they would have backed into the play-in with 36, 37 wins, like, that would have been miserable. But I figure they'll probably win a few more games here. Maybe they get to 500. Maybe they get to 40, hopefully. And hopefully they just don't limp in. And we'll see from there. Like I said, we'll see if they get through the play-in. But as you mentioned, as we've kind of worried about Milwaukee Bucks waiting for them probably in the first round if they do get through. And that's just going to be a recipe for probably another just fucking beat down. So it's been better that they've been playing a little better lately, but overall it just doesn't seem like much is going to change in terms of the final outcome. Kevin, thoughts on this game tonight and just the Bulls in general?
You mentioned it before. It just feels like every time we do this, this is kind of the tone of it, because God forbid they ever give us a good game to talk about. I don't know. I mean, I would have liked to have seen what this game looked like with a fair whistle to get a better sense of where the Bulls are. Cause like they had to basically play perfect basketball against the Lakers in LA to win that game. They were shooting out of their minds and had they made a million turnovers, and they still only won by 10 because the Lakers got a fucking absurd whistle. This time it was basically they got that same absurd whistle, but then the Bulls didn't play as well, didn't force as many turnovers, and didn't make 50% of their threes or whatever, and didn't get up as many threes. That is the overwhelming sense that I have in these games where they get down big. And even today it was a little bit surprising because they got down big again early. They came back and they had a 3-point lead at one point, and then they gave it right back. But I was so shocked that they even were able to get back into it, because they're constantly up against it when it comes to the math game. They shoot the fewest 3-pointers per game in the league, and they give up the second most 3-pointers in the league per game. So they are every game at a 8.5 3-point attempt deficit. So they're playing against the math every single game, and they're not talented enough to row uphill in that way. And, it just is, that is fundamentally the problem with the team. The role players are not good enough shooters. And frankly, building a team around DeMar DeRozan, who shoots 20 shots a game, and almost all of them are 2-pointers, it puts you in the hole relative to the rest of the league in terms of getting 3-point shots up. So you need all of your role players to be good shooters to account for that. But the problem is that their three stars, or their three all-stars, or whatever you want to call them, are all, either mediocre or bad defenders. DeMar is bad. So you have to have good defenders, and good defenders that also can shoot threes at volume are incredibly rare. You just don't find them. Maybe Pat will be that guy someday, but to date, he is still the guy that record scratches out of open threes, that after record scratching out of an open three, steps out of bounds or travels. I'm so fucking sick of him doing that.
He had one tonight.
He's been doing it his entire pro career. It is so frustrating. Io does it too. He loves to pump fake out of a 3-pointer and then drive into the lane and get his shit stuffed at the basket. And it's just they have to have guys that are willing to let it fly. But the problem is, it's just a roster construction problem. And I don't think Billy's a creative enough offensive coach to make up for the offensive or the roster shortcomings offensively that this team has. And maybe they could do better with balancing things out a little bit in terms of they are, their defense is really good most of the time. I think some of that is a little bit fugazi because of how many threes they give up, and teams just overall on the year are not shooting that well on threes against the Bulls. Maybe that means that they contest shots better, but all of the evidence we have from a, analytic perspective on that indicates that 3% against is almost entirely luck. It's like 90 to 95% luck. It's the roster is flawed. We keep saying it. Lonzo solves a lot of the problems that they have in terms of getting, not giving up much on defense and, or anything on defense. He's, better than the guys that they have, and getting up threes at volume, and hitting them at a high percentage. But he's probably gone forever. So, it's just the same old shit with this team. They have been playing better because I think that just having another competent guard who can do some things does make the roster make a little bit more sense, but it still fundamentally doesn't make sense. And I think Ricky has pointed this out before. Pat Bev takes forever to load up his three-pointer. I mean, both Pats, honestly, they take too long to get their shot off. I would say that Patrick Williams has sped his release up a little bit, but it's still too slow. And it wouldn't even be a problem because he's like 6'9" or whatever, so he should be able to shoot over most people. But because he shoots it so slow and he's a tentative guy in the first place, he should be able to just like look over the top of guys and shoot over the top of them, but he doesn't have that kind of confidence, so he record scratches out of things because his shot is too slow. But Pat Bev is even worse. Like his shit is so slow that he shoots a good percentage, and that helps just because the Bulls have so many guys that just don't shoot it that well, and don't get them up at volume. But it's the same problems that we keep talking about with this team. Nothing has fundamentally changed. Pat Bev has been about as good as you could hope for on the buyout market. Most of the time, the buyout market is like kind of garbage, and like everybody gets all their hopes up on buyout guys, and then they don't actually mean anything. I think he's been way better than the average buyout guy, and probably one of the better buyout guys of the last, 5 years or so. But it still doesn't fix the problems with this roster.
There have been a couple really rough games. I mentioned the Sixers game, like tonight. Again, Pat Bev was 0-for-5 from 3, total non-factor, minus 30. Obviously not all on him, but like, and I think that Sixers game was very similar. But yeah, I mean, having like whatever competence there has helped. And like, he is a nuisance on defense. He has had a few good games, like that Heat game where he scored like 14 straight points or some shit. Like that might be like the peak of the Patrick Beverley, or I don't know. We'll see if they actually win a play-in game and he jumps on the sideboard or whatever. But he's been pretty good. Like again, after we saw what happened to Tristan Thompson last year, hard to be much worse than that. And he's certainly been more impactful there. But so it's like it just if you lose these last couple games, it's kind of like whatever. We'll see. Again, good that they're playing better, but I don't know. And the three to the point about the 3-point stuff, like obviously true. Like we saw in the Clippers game, the Clippers just getting threes up. And I mean, Nick Batum had 8 threes. Eric Gordon was launching threes. And they just had the Bulls totally out of sorts. And again, like schedule loss there, but I mean, the Clippers were just getting open looks from three and just drilling them. And then tonight, the Lakers were kind of, the starters were like basically doing whatever they want. They didn't take that many threes, but yeah. The math problem is something we've talked about forever. And I know I was seeing on Twitter, and Kevin, I think I saw you retweet this today about in the playoffs, was it last year, the team that whatever it was either made the most threes, made more threes in the game or took more threes. I can't, it was something about like a 70% winning percentage. And like, you don't want to like always boil it down to whatever it is, 3-pointers. But like the way that the game is played now, like and it's such a huge part of it where like if you are swimming uphill so much, like that's how we see whatever DeMar is shooting 50% from the field, like Vooch is having a good season, Zach has been great here, and the with the Bulls overall as a team just are their offensive rating still average to whatever below average despite like those guys all like having like seemingly pretty damn good offensive seasons because there's at such a disadvantage from the 3-point line.
Yeah, average would be great. Average would be great. They're bad on offense. Like their offense is really bad. Like they are, I think they're like they have to be. They're like bottom 5, I think, or bottom 6 in offensive rating because like their defense is great. Like their defensive rating is great, but they are a incredibly mediocre team that is below 500, you know, so the offense has to be by definition bad. If it was, if they had a great defense with a, with an average offense, they'd be cooking, they'd be in business, but they very much are not.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, obviously I agree with all that. One thing that was a little disappointing about today was it just felt like they weren't really utilizing LaVine to get him going off the ball. Like, I think that that's been one thing that's changed about the offense since Pat Bev has come aboard, is that, you know, LaVine is initiating the offense less often. I think that's freed him up to, you know, run around screens a little bit more, get more catch and shoot attempts from three. Tonight, he takes 14 shots, only two threes. That's just going to be a bad, like, statistical breakdown for Zach. He's got to shoot, like we say, 10 threes a game. If he's taking 14 shots, at least, you know, 50 or 60% of them.
Against the Clippers, he only took one three, right? I feel like there was a recent game where he didn't take many. Like, he's obviously been attacking the paint, like, relentlessly and finishing at an incredibly high level. I mean, it's hard to complain too much about Zach, considering I think he's at, like, 30 a game. Or maybe not after tonight, at least, but, like, close to 30 a game, like, shooting over 50% in March. Like, he's been fantastic, but some troubling trends, I feel like, recently with just the three-point rate coming way down. Ricky, I'll send it back to you. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. He was 0-for-2 against the Lakers tonight, 0-for-2 against the Clippers the other night. But before that, I mean, he made 6-for-9 against a depleted Blazers team on Friday. And throughout most of March, he had been shooting a decent amount of threes. I guess for the month now, he's at 6.6 a game attempts, 44%. So, yeah, I mean, they got to get Zach shooting more threes. We've been talking about that all season, too. He's the one guy who is a really great three-point shooter on this team. I'm sure it's tough to play that way, too. You have to be in great shape cardio-wise to be running around screens and jacking shots all day. You got to, like, buy into that role, because someone like Zach sort of came up idolizing Kobe. Kobe wasn't running around screens and shooting threes. Kobe was holding the ball and jab-stepping and working from mid-range. And Zach does have a tendency to fall into that. Obviously, Zach's been really good throughout March and throughout the second half. But, you know, tonight, when you just evaluate, why couldn't they make or take any threes tonight? Well, the fact that Zach LaVine went 0-for-2 is a big reason why. He's someone who typically you could count on to make three or four threes every night. And then, you know, when he is creating more off the dribble tonight, 5 turnovers. Like, he had some pretty bad passing reads in the half court. And it's okay. It'll happen. Zach's been playing at a super high level this year. But like you guys have said, the margin for error is small. This team has to close the season strong, because they dug themselves into a huge hole in the beginning of the year with poor roster construction by losing all these close games. So, yeah, I mean, there's not too much new to talk about here. I will say I was a little disappointed in Patrick Williams, too. Rough game tonight.
Oh my God. The Pats were awful
rough
today.
Game for Pat Will. 1-for-7 from the field. 0-of-5 from three. Only 2 points. Jason, when we did this podcast in the preseason, I said, is it crazy for Patrick Williams to average 15 points a game? Is that too much to ask? Well, at this point, I want Patrick Williams to average 15 points a game for 1 month because he hasn't even come close to that so far this year. If you look at his monthly scoring total, 7, 10, 10, 12.5, 9.2, 10 this month. So he's just a guy who does not give you consistent production offensively. I do think Pat has made a lot of strides this year, especially on the defensive end, where I feel like coming into this year, he was sort of theoretically a good defensive player. But this year, I believe he's proven he's actually a good defensive player. And so that's nice that we can at least say that. And certainly, you know, this is a Bulls team that was running 4-guard lineups for long stretches in this Lakers game without Andre Drummond, kept out for mental health reasons, just with this roster in general sort of having a lot of guards and not a lot of wing-sized players. Pat is really important on that, but you need more from him offensively. I'm kind of an apologist because I still think, like, there's just not a lot of offensive oxygen left for him when he's playing with the quote-unquote big three. Someone they need in that role is more of a volume three-point shooter. That's not Pat Will's game. And he's gotten better this year, and he's still only 21, and you got to feel pretty decent about his development at this point. But, you know, until the offense clicks, and it hasn't clicked yet, it might not be close to clicking. He is more or less just like sort of a guy. You know, he's not a true foundational piece if he can only score 10 points a game. Tonight he scored 2. So, you know, Pat's still got more work to do. I am really encouraged with Pat's season. Pat has not missed a game this year. That is wonderful. He's played every single game. So just him, you know, showing he's durable and him getting more experience. But offensively, does he look like a meaningfully different player from the guy we saw either his rookie year or when he was healthy his second year? I would say no. He really doesn't look like a meaningfully different offensive player. So that is a bit of a bummer.
Yeah, I mean, tonight was really bad. There was a stretch there where he kept getting open looks from three and was just bricking all of them. And there was one, Kevin has talked about the record scratches and the stepping out of bounds, and we saw that happen tonight. There was one stretch, one like sequence where I think he bricked the three and then LeBron just totally left him in the dust for a layup. And it's like, this is just brutal stuff, really tough to watch. And yeah, overall, like with Pat, like, I think it's just the expectations just have to change at this point. I mean, you expect out of a number four pick, whatever you hope, foundational star player, like the development's been slow. I think the expectations just have to come down. Like I think he's a pretty good player. He's had some nice games off the bench. I think against the Clippers, I think the other night, he had a really nice game. Some of that is garbage time stuff, but still, like, but at some point, like, flashes have to turn into more consistent production, and it just is not. Like, a lot of guys in the NBA have flashes, but the key to becoming whatever an all-star level player is obviously doing that every single night. And even though he is playing with other guys that are taking up that usage, like, the offense is not good. Like, and if Patrick Williams was actually really, really good, the offense would be better because he would be helping that take it to the next level. But he just isn't really that guy. He just doesn't seem like he has that really in him as an offensive player. Maybe it'll happen. He is still young, as you mentioned. Maybe it'll happen if they make changes and he does get more usage. But I mean, at this point, he hasn't really proven that he should get more usage. His 3-point rate has come up a bit. His percentage is pretty good tonight, notwithstanding. But yeah, I mean, all 3 years of his career right now, he's at like basically between 9 and 10 points a game, and there hasn't been really any meaningful improvement in that number. His defense is much better. The rebounding isn't really there. And I know, like, I can cut him some slack on rebounding because he's always he's a lot of time on the perimeter guarding star players. But like, at some point when you're 6'7 or 6'8 and like as strong as him, you need to be grabbing more than like 2 or 3 rebounds a game. And that still happens way too often. And like, I mean, we saw tonight the Bulls got punked on the glass. It's like, they need to see a little more from Patrick Williams there. And like I said, I know it can be tough sometimes depending on positioning, but yeah, so ultimately, it's with the expectations game. The expectation game just has to be lowered for him, and he's a good player. I think he's going to be in the NBA for a long time. If the Bulls keep him around for a while, I don't think he'll sign an extension this offseason. But again, certainly would like to see more from him. But for right now, he's just not that dude right now. Kevin, I know you have some thoughts on Pat.
I mean, here's the thing with Pat is people talk about his flashes, but like with other players, when you're talking about flashes, it's like, oh, they had like a 30, 40 point game, but they're inconsistent and like routinely have, you know, 10 point games or whatever. When people talk about flashes with Pat, it's like, oh, he made a cool pass one time. It's like
yeah, everyone does that.
it's insane to me. Like he averages like 10 points a game. Like that's what his average is. That's like disappointing, like a disappointing game for most guys where he's drafted. But like that's what his average is. And like he has a lot of these games where he has like 2 points. And like what are the high points? Like what are offensively, what are the big games that he's had where he's played against real competition? Don't talk to me about the last game of the year last year when they were playing a G League team. Like I'm talking like about against real competition, against a real NBA team. When has he shown anything offensively as like a big time scorer?
Kevin, he has one 20-point game all season. He scored 22 points one time this year. And then if you go back to last year, he topped 20 only in the last game against the Timberwolves. And then
yeah, that game is fake. That game is totally fugazi. Like, I don't want to hear about that stupid Timberwolves game. They were playing, like, literally a G League game. So, yeah, like, these flashes are just not actually non-existent. Like, any player in the NBA can have a cool pass occasionally, like a nice zip. Like the number of players now that can dribble and throw that you know cross court pass into the corner is really high. Like that's not a particular like that used to be like a sign of like a special passing vision. That's just a routine play that guys make now. That's not like something to like get overly excited about. And like the fact that he just never gets to 20 points a game, like some of that sure is like, you know, that the usage is used up by all the oxygen is used up by the other three big guys. But you know what? If those guys thought that he could shoulder more of the load, he would get more shots. But what that tells me is like he's not aggressive enough. I know people hate it when you talk about how he's not aggressive, but he's not. He floats. He doesn't, really engage himself in the action. Too often he just stands in the corner. He doesn't, like, you know, come over to set a screen or to involve himself in action. And he doesn't, you know, the other way to get opportunities when you're not necessarily having things scripted for you to get the ball is to go hit the goddamn glass. And he doesn't do that either. And so I don't know what people expect he's going to be offensively. Like he needs to be a elite lockdown defender for him to not be a huge disappointment for where he was picked. And maybe he will be. I mean, he's got some good stuff analytically on his defense this season. I don't totally buy that he's like a, you know, top 10 percentile, like a 90th percentile defender, like some metrics seem to grade him out as. Like that does not ring true to me. But I think he's a solid defensive player, but a solid defensive player and a guy who is like harming you on offense, because I think his lack of ability to draw the defense's attention and to actually make teams worry about him, I think that does harm your offense. He's not the worst one on the floor for the Bulls most of the time when it comes to that, but he's part of the problem. Like, and I think Io is another one where, like, I mean, it's not Io's fault. He's a second round pick. He's not supposed to be as big of a part of a rotation as he is. But he also is not somebody that the defenses really have to worry about very much. And then you have Caruso, who's the same thing. Like, he, you know, is shooting pretty well on three-pointers, but he doesn't shoot enough of them. And he doesn't really do anything else on offense except for, like, you know, make connecting passes, which is, like, that's fine, but that's not, like, worrying the defense in any real way. So I think Pat's a harmful offensive player at this point. I think it's really hard to argue against that. And he's an okay to solid defender. I think he needs to really become, like, a great defender and get to, like, decent offensively if he's going to be like a super to be like a meaningful plus player.
So I saw my guy Drew Stevens tweet this today. Today was Patrick Williams' 164th career game, which would be to complete 82-game seasons. Of course, we know this is Pat's third year. He only played 17 regular season games last year. He's only scored 20 or more points five times. Two of those times was during the last or second-to-last game of the season. When, like, nobody really cared.
Yeah, fake.
Yeah, so otherwise it's only happened three times. Twice his rookie year, once this year. It is disappointing. And, like, I want to take a really pro-Pat stance because, shit, what else does this team really have to look forward to? I do think that every team in the league wants big wings who offer some kind of rim protection, and Pat sort of has that skill set. Every team in the league wants a guy who can shoot 42% from three at the four spot. Pat is doing that right now, but he only takes 3.3 attempts per game. So his volume isn't high enough to actually threaten the defense on those shots. And we saw tonight, the Lakers were very content to pat the paint and let the Bulls role players shoot threes because they know even if a guy like Patrick Williams is shooting 42% from three this year, there's a reason why his volume is so low. It's because he's not a confident three-point shooter. Ayo Dosunmu, very similar thing. Ayo played pretty good tonight. But in general, like, Io's going to turn down a lot of open threes. Caruso turns down a lot of open threes. That's what we've been talking about all year. So I think there's still a lot to build on with Pat. This game was an example of why you can't get too excited, because his three ball wasn't falling tonight, 0 for 5. And when that happened, what else did he give you? Nothing, really. And the Bulls got killed on the glass. You got to think he gets a little bit of credit for that, or a little bit of blame for that. And yeah, just a rough night for Pat Will, rough night for Pat Bev. Only one rebound for Pat Will tonight as the Bulls get pounded on the glass. Continues to be frustrating. So
that's bad. Like I said, I know he's like guarding LeBron and stuff like that, but you need to get more than one rebound, bro. There's too many games where he gets one or like two rebounds.
Switch out to the perimeter and still manage to rebound the ball. I don't want to hear any fucking excuses for him on the glass. Like, he needs to be better. He just does.
You're fucking 6'8". You're huge. 6'7", 6'8", and you're strong. You gotta hit the glass better than that, especially when they don't have Drummond and stuff like that.
Yeah, so. He's built like an ox. Like, yeah. he needs to be, like, down there moving people. Like, we can't wait around for him to, like, have the Andrew Wiggins epiphany of, like, oh, if I try hard, I can get rebounds.
Yeah, not great. If there was anything great today, I mean, nothing really that great. I mean, Vooch had a nice game, although at the end, Anthony Davis was fucking destroying him. He had a nice game offensively. He had, like, I think 29 points. Again, Bulls three starters, like, I think shot, look at their shooting percentages, and they were like, Vooch was like 12 of 16. DeMar had an efficient game. Zach didn't too many threes, but he was like 7 of 13. But the Bulls got absolutely smoked with him on the court. Like, and then I feel like that just it's been the story of the season. Like, those guys have, like, good games, and they just still doesn't matter because they just don't win enough. But I guess, like, Kobe had a pretty nice game. He didn't shoot well to start, but he had, I think, 8 or 9 assists. Kobe's been playing, like, if you want, like, one, like, legit positive, like, Kobe's been playing pretty well lately. He had a really nice hot stretch shooting wise, but his passing's been better. He took a charge from LeBron today. So that was nice. I don't know if we have to go too far into Kobe right now, but he has been pretty good lately. Like, I've never been a big Kobe guy. He's obviously had his stretches where he's been fun to watch, but, like, when he's not been shooting well, it's usually just, like, been a disaster. But I feel like he's kind of well, his game has kind of become more well-rounded this season. Made himself a little money, I think, with a little contract push. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Kobe, but at least he's not a complete, coming down the stretch last season, he was awful. He was basically unplayable. He was brutal in, like, the last month or so. He was brutal against the Bucks in the playoffs. Like, one of the reasons why the Bulls were so bad last year, like, Lonzo out, Zach was hurting, Kobe was awful, and just, like, nothing was working. But Kobe has been better now. I think he's really helped them. We've seen him have some, like, big plus minus games too, so at least he's been playing better. That's at least one good positive.
Yeah, I mean, I think Kobe's been pretty good. I still think his defense off the ball, he's still got awareness issues, for sure. But I think is always going to be a part of his game, and it's not unusual for scoring guards. But I think his, you know, his handle is much better. I think that's been the biggest improvement. He can, you know, handle the ball and not have to worry that it's going to get stolen anytime he goes in any kind of traffic. And that's allowed him to be better as a playmaker when he gets into the teeth of the defense. So as like a second side attack the, you know, rotated defense off of the creation of one of the stars, you know, he's been better in that respect. I still wish he made more of his jumpers. Like, his jumper looks really good. But yeah, and like,
still very streaky. I feel
like he mostly takes catch and shoot threes that are, should be really high percentage. And I think he still shoots like not, I think he's like pretty much like league average on mostly open three pointers. And so you'd like to see his shooting percentage get better. You know, especially for a guy who's kind of like a scoring specialist or a shooting specialist, you would hope that he would be, you know, better at shooting. But you know, I mean, he's worked hard on, you know, aspects of his game that needed work on them. So I don't want to like be too critical of him, but, I don't know. I think he's a guy. I think he's, you know, he's fine. I don't think he's like, I think if they let him go, it wouldn't be like the end of the world, because, you know, he's not like moving the needle in any significant way. I don't think
he's turning into Lowry if he leaves. He's not going to become whatever 25-10 All Star.
Yeah, I don't see that for him. I mean, Lowry, the talent was always way higher. The potential was always way higher than what Kobe is. I mean, Kobe could be a better version of what he currently is, but I kind of think that, you know, bench scoring guard is kind of what he was always pretty much destined to be, which is not like the worst thing for a seventh overall pick, but also, you know, for as brutal as the season was that they got to draft him with, it kind of sucks to end up with like a bench player. And, you know, I think that was kind of always his, what the expectation should have been for him. So to not take a bigger swing there is, I don't know, feels like maybe a little bit of a missed opportunity, but we can blame that on the prior administration. So.
All right. I think we should look ahead and wrap this up.
Yeah,
huh?
Let's do it. What do we got? Hornets Friday at Hornets, which the Hornets have been playing better lately. I think something like, well, I think I saw that they're like the best defense in the NBA and like since the All-Star break. So like weird shit happened in the second half of the season, but Hornets Friday. And then I think it's what Grizzlies and Hawks, that Hawks game will be big at the United Center. So we will see. Kevin, are you going to say something or no?
I was just going to say, I kind of feel like the Bulls realize that they're kind of locked into the 10 seed. And I don't think that they're trying as hard as they probably should be, to be honest. Like, I don't know. It really felt like after they got that Lakers win, it was like, all right, we're pretty much locked in here. Like, because that same night, like, the other two teams that were chasing the 10 seed both lost, and like, it put enough distance between them that it was just like, oh, all right, well, we probably, it'd be really hard to catch the Raptors. And, you know, especially because they had that essentially schedule loss with the Clippers. It was like, it's going to be hard to catch the Raptors because they have the tiebreak on us. So, you know, I don't know. I just don't feel like their effort has necessarily been great the last two games. So I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't close the season very strong.
Yeah, we'll see. Ricky, any final thoughts?
Yeah, at Charlotte, then home against Memphis, home Atlanta, at Milwaukee, at Dallas, home against Detroit. I don't know, probably got to go 5-1 if you want to have any chance at the 8th seed, considering you're, what, a game back right now, two games back? Two back.
Well,
two.
Technically, really three, though. Cause
three. Toronto, to get to 8th, they'll probably have to, yeah, they'll probably have to jump three games because of the Raptors.
Yeah, and I mean, making up three games in six is almost impossible.
Almost impossible. So yeah, man, and don't forget, if you make the play-in but don't make the playoffs, you are still in the lottery, which could be the Bulls' reality here. It'll still be, you know, single elimination basketball is so much fun, so it'll still be fun to watch the Bulls in the play-in tournament. Plus, if they lose, is anyone going to be sad to see the 2022-2023 Chicago Bulls be no more. Like, it'll kind of be a relief. This season's over. It's been pretty disappointing, but more of the same from the Bulls. More of the same from the Cash Considerations podcast. When we have a live episode, the Bulls get their teeth kicked in. It fucking happened again. God damn it.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Seriously. And yeah, I mean, if the Bulls, yeah, whatever, Bulls 10 seed, whatever the hell they end up with, like, if they do lose and they don't make the playoffs, it's like, sure, great. Give us, rig that lottery. Again, we've talked about it all year. Rig the lottery. Get us Wemby.
Give us Wemby.
And it'll be fine. Like, some of these other teams have realized that we knew the Bulls were never really going to go the tanking route. That's fine. Whatever. They're going to go for it. Fine. Tanking is often for cowards. Like, we've seen the Blazers have tanked the way. Like, the Wizards have felt like they were tanking, and they somehow beat the Celtics by like 20 points the other day. I don't know how that happened, but like, whatever. Yeah, if the Bulls would get in, give us a competitive play-in game, and if you lose, whatever, if you go to Toronto and you lose some annoying game because the Raptors are annoying, like, whatever, man, then we'll get in the lottery. Maybe they get, the Bulls get lucky again for the first time, whatever, since they got the D-Rose. Give us another D-Rose lucky thing, and maybe the Bulls will jump up in the lottery. And could be worse, I guess. So we'll see what happens. Like, I said, I don't want to root that. I wouldn't want them to root for them to lose in like the play-in, but like, because whatever, rooting for them to lose in the play, like, facing Milwaukee would be miserable if that's like what the outcome would be. They will not win that. But like, so like, it'd be fun. Watching playoff games are still fun. But if they lose and they get in the lottery instead of getting fucking pounded by the Bucks, certainly not gonna like cry too much about that. Like, after, as Ricky said, after this long season that's been super disappointing, I'll be like, whatever, good riddance. Again, give me the lottery look. And that's gonna do it for us here on this episode of Cash Considerers. Kevin, do you have something else before I wrap it up here, or no?
No, I was just laughing at that, at the takeaways.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, that's going to do it for us here officially now. On this episode of Cash Considerations, the Chicago Bulls podcast. As always, thank you guys. Thank you, Kevin, for joining us for this another horrible live episode after another blowout loss. Fun times. We'll probably be back sometime next week. Again, last week of the regular season. The season, it's been a long season. It's been a frustrating one. It's almost over, and we'll see where the things shake out for the Bulls, as we just mentioned. So thanks again for listening, and have a good night, everybody. This has been Cash Considerations, the Chicago Bulls podcast. We'll talk to you guys next time.
This is last year's Bulls. It's not last year's Bulls.